This is the first Australian female-hosted surfing podcast, Amongst the Waves. I'm your host, Tanya Carroll, and I'm a surf coach, a Czech practitioner, and I'm completely caught up in all things surfing and getting to behind the scenes of surfing culture. I have surrendered my soul to becoming a better surfer. In each of the episodes of Amongst the Waves, I will bring you a perspective you might not have thought about before, in the hope that it entertains you and helps you learn something new. I also hope that it helps build your stoke. My guest on today's episode is Damon Tudor. Damon is an experienced CEO and general manager with over 20 years' experience in executive roles across a range of consumer-focused industries, both in Australia and internationally. After a long hiatus away from Australian surf breaks, Damon renewed his passion for surfing when he joined Urban Surf in 2019, working alongside a dedicated crew to deliver Australia's first surf park and in turn revolutionising surfing in Australia by making it more convenient, safe and accessible than ever. It's been the career ride of a lifetime for Damon. Damon resides on the northern beaches of Sydney and enjoys anything outdoors or sports related with his family. He enjoys surfing, swimming, mountain biking and climbing. He is also a self-confessed cricket tragic, having played for many years. Damon also enjoys hitting a round of golf with friends and being on the tools with landscaping and renovation projects around his family home. Following the successful launch of Urban Surf Melbourne, Damon was appointed as Group CEO in March 2020 and was charged with Urban Surf's expansion across the country. In July 2021, he led the successful capital raise for the second Urban Surf location to commence construction in spring 2021, located at Sydney Olympic Park. Welcome to the podcast, Damon. Can you tell us a little bit about your role at Urban Surf?
Yeah, so I'm the CEO of Urban Surf, very fortunate position to have. I actually got involved in it right at the beginning of 2019. So I was living overseas for the previous 10 years over in the Middle East. My background is largely consumer goods and services. And an old boss of mine who was our chairman at the time, David Wakeley, he reached out and said there was a project that was in need of a bit of help. There'd been some challenges around cost overruns and delays and various things. And a lot of my background over my career has been sorting some of those things out. So I started right at the beginning of 2019, 2.5 years ago.
Tell me about the core values of Urban Surf and how they've changed over the years because of COVID, but also because of changes within the company. Has that changed and what are those core values now?
Yeah, I think you got to reflect on what we're trying to do as a business. We use various terms that you've probably seen in the media. You know, we use surf more and we use this phrase called soulful progression of surfing. Surfing is inherently the most important thing to us and it's something we believe in, but you know, a wave pool and how they work today, it is quite a departure from the traditional roots of where surfing comes from. So we use this term soulful progression where we want to demonstrate that we really respect where surfing comes from, but we do want to progress it and create opportunities for people to surf more and or engage in the sport that may not have before, and that's where the wave pool is quite unique. Linking it to values then is really crucial. So there's a couple of really basic things we follow. I mean, where we came from originally, it hasn't been defined in the past. It was really about the surf proposition itself. But now we believe in things like customer stoke, obviously smiles on people's faces when they're seeing going in the water, they're in the water or they're coming out of the water is really important. Safety is a really important aspect for us. Surfing is inherently a dangerous sport. There's many times when I get out of the water at the beach and I don't even know that I've scratched myself or hit a rock or got a fin slash in the ocean. So if you imagine that in a pool environment, it's the same. But we're also big believers in, you know, working as a team, accountability, operating in that way that delivers that amazing customer experience, because it's not just about the surfing, it is about the whole experience. And I think that's the only way we can really communicate with our customers to attract people who are both core surfers and non-surfers.
So how does that, or how have you embedded that within the staff, within Urban Surf?
Yeah, so for me, when we first started, you know, we were a team of, say, 5 people and we've grown it to about 150 since that time. And obviously there's been impacts of COVID throughout that period. But right now, you know, the business is operating, we're trading at those sorts of levels. So for me, it's something I feel very strongly about is values and how we deal with customers and how we operate together as a team. I, in those days, have been involved in a lot of the individual recruitment of some of our key staff and managers. I insisted on going to interviews, and whenever I get the chance to meet people now, I always do. We are very clear and we're quite repetitive about that value set that I spoke of and what we stand for. And it's something we like to train in the team to make sure that people, you know, are aware of the expectations of our business from a values perspective, but also how you can put them into practice, how we create an accessible environment that's welcoming and a lot of fun, but also safe, you know. So it's just that constant reiteration of what we are. But I think, you know, first and foremost, you have to have people that believe in the value set you're trying to portray. And not everyone does, and that's okay. But Urban Surf may not be the right sort of place for them then. And again, like I said, that's okay. But we do make a real effort to try and attract the right sort of talent that fits within that mold.
How does that differ from the surf culture that's out in the ocean? Because I come from a place where I've loved surfing, and we've spoken about this. I knew that Urban Surf was opening a long time before it actually even you turned over ground up at Tullamarine, because we owned a gym in Kiwa Park and I'd heard about it. But prior to that, I grew up in Canberra, which is landlocked. The closest to the ocean we get is the beaches down in Tathra and the New South Wales coast. So I grew up on the beaches of Tathra and Bega, and well, not Bega because it doesn't have a beach, but Eden and those places. But how does the culture that you're trying to bring through the company and the staff, and I'm going to talk about guests to the parks as well, but how does that differ, or is it similar to what you see out in the ocean?
Yeah, it's got a little bit of both, right? So let's compare it. You know, I live in Narrabeen, up on the northern beaches. North Narrabeen's a very well-known competitive break. I can understand how, you know, a non-surfer may be a little bit intimidating going out in a beach break or on a point or anything like that, where there's a lot of existing surfers out there, you know. So let's look at, you know, what the ocean experience is. You know, for your core surfer, it's pretty comfortable. You know, we fish around, we find spots, you know, we have our favorites, we have our locals, all these types of things. But for your non-surfer, who we talk to a lot as well, you know, anything from sharks, stingers, currents to just trying to not look silly is a really important factor in their sort of day. So that's where the beach can perhaps be a little bit intimidating, you know, and that desire to get out there and throw yourself at the ocean can be hindered as a result of that. If I look at the surf pool experience, so, and this is where that customer experience for us is really important, right? Because yes, we want to have a great quality wave experience for our core surf guests. They are absolutely crucial to the brand, and we want to respect those surfers. But at the same time, because you've got this controlled environment, you are able to create perhaps a more welcoming experience where it's actually okay to be there for your first time. If you fall off the wave and you miss one, it's okay because there's plenty more waves to come, and we'll talk about being in the water in a second. But, you know, if you look at what we're doing with Urban Surf with women's only sessions, ladies only sessions, you know, serviced by female staff, you know, again, just to create that comfort level that, hey, when you get into a wetsuit, you may not feel exactly comfortable in that for the first time, right?
Not at all.
You know, I still struggle fumbling into my steamer, you know, on the winter days and things like that. But that's a very common thing. And I think identifying exactly how that customer is feeling is just so important. And the best way to compare it is, I talked about, say, being in a competitive break where you're fighting for a wave. You see a big wave coming in the set, or one that looks really good. You might be up against 10 other people trying to get on that ride, particularly the more competitive breaks. Whereas in the wave pool, you know you're going to get, you know, probably 10 to 12 waves in an hour. They're all consistent. They're all in sequence. So you have a more relaxed atmosphere in the water at the wave park. You know, it's really unusual when you surf there. People are pretty chilled out. You know, they're having conversations about their workday, or what did they do on the weekend, or what do you feel like for dinner at the restaurant, you know, when we get out of the water, which in the ocean you would just never see, because there's a lot more intensity there, you know. So it is quite a different experience, and you kind of forget when you're catching a few waves that what the ocean surfing is like, you know. It's a really interesting experience.
Going backwards and forwards between the both of them, you mean?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, for me, having come up in the ocean and surfing in the ocean, you know, I love the ocean surfing experience around the scenery, being out there waiting for the step to come through and things like that. The wave pool for me, I love it because there's so much surfing you do in a short space, but it's almost like a gym to surfing. You know, you're almost training a bit more. So, but it's a great experience as well. But, you know, if I was to pick one, what would I prefer? I still love the ocean, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, an hour in the wave pool getting a dozen waves is pretty cool, you know. So that's a good fun thing to be able to do in a short space of time.
It's guaranteed, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So how does that culture, and how do you express that to your guests? Like, we talked about the staff being embedded in the core values of the company, but how do you pass that on to the guests?
Yeah, we need to, you know, I think first and foremost is that communication. You know, we're making a real effort now to make sure we talk to the mums, the time poor dads that may have surfed when they were younger but have kids now and don't. I'm a classic example of that. School groups, tourists that have never been in the water before, even things around water awareness training, you know, all these sort of things we're doing to communicate. And the key for the staffing of our park, I think, is that you don't just hire a bunch of surfers to run a surf park. That's where things will break, you know. You definitely want some gun surfers, and we have some absolute axes in our team that I've seen and been shredded over many, many sessions. But then you also need those staff members that actually might have no idea about surfing, but they have other skills they bring to the table. It might be that they're excellent at customer experience or ticketing or retail or the hire or just managing the park in general. So I think having that balance, because if you don't have the staff there that cross a lot of demographics and backgrounds and diversity, you can't possibly translate that to the customer experience, you know, and that to me is the key. So if you have that team there willing and able to do that, naturally your guests when they come are going to have that more welcome effect that we're looking for, you know, and I think that translates really nicely.
How are you reaching your markets?
Two different ways. I mean, our focus at the moment is on, you know, we use a lot of digital. We use the uniqueness of the park in terms of PR stories. There's a lot of great information like that, you know, that we still have this high interest. If you remember our launch, you know, we had the Chris Hemsworth of the world come along for a session, and, you know, Lewis Hamilton, when the Formula One was cancelled last year in Melbourne, rocked up to a staff session and was wondering what was going on. And we invited him in and he came for a session with us with the staff, you know, just some crazy stuff like that. So I think the uniqueness of the surf pool now is still, you know, a great story. But I think the digital channels as well, you know, we have really strong engagement on, you know, Facebook and Instagram and all the various channels we use in that way. But that sort of thing is important because I think it's a great way to connect with the community, and surfing inherently is a community sort of driven activity. So using the socials and building that community, I think, is really important. We have a couple of unofficial urban surf groups like Urban Surf Board Riders. You know, the guys, if they're not happy about something, they'll let you know. Happy about something, they'll let you know. And I think that's a really good thing. You know, we have a relationship with those guys, and look, we'll put the hand up and say, hey, we may not have done that right, or we may not have got to that point yet to improve something, but we do want to get to that point. And the feedback's really valuable. You know, so I think all of those sorts of channels that we're using, very community driven, are really useful. You know, over time, you'd probably broaden it. You know, if you think about when COVID hit us, you know, 11 weeks after launch, we had to close the park, which was crazy. You know, so you essentially lost international tourism, just gone, like out of your mix. Like, it's a massive hit.
Borders closed. Yep.
Yeah, exactly right. Then domestic tourism, as we know, is schizophrenic. You know, can we travel? Can we not? You know, I know I've missed a number of holidays as a result. My son, a few weeks ago, we were due to come to the park for a 2-day, four-hour blast of cruiser sessions to really hone him up, and we couldn't go. The poor kid was in tears. You know, it's like it's pretty crazy how that's happened. So I think hopefully once COVID improves and, you know, life gets a bit more back to normal, we'll certainly go after some of those segments where we'd love to get them involved, the tourism market, to create that experience, that quintessential Australian experience.
Diversion question, or a diversion of one of those questions. How do you respond to those? And I've had this experience firsthand, and I'm not going to say with which company, but when I said I was training to be a staff member at Urban Surf, they were like, oh, it's never going to succeed. It's not the same as the ocean. It's different. Like, they're really negative comments that I have heard around wave pools versus the ocean.
Mm.
How do you negate that, or how do you respond to those comments?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic you raise. You know, certainly when I joined, I came across some of that where, you know, naturally people were a little bit pessimistic. And, you know, I think it's a combination of things. You know, look, anything startup land-wise or new business or something entrepreneurial just requires a degree of resilience, full stop. You know, that's no surprise to anyone. So I don't need to sort of bang on about that. But I think if you're committed to a task and a vision, you've just got to keep pushing forward. You've just got to try and develop it as best you can. But I think, you know, when you look at what we have, where some of that negativity may have come from is that wave pools of the past were quite different. You know, if you go back 10 years, or if you go to your water park sort of surge pool or a lazy river, it was a very small adaptation of, you know, surging water, whereas now wave pool technology has progressed to the point where it's comparable to an ocean going wave. I think that's the key difference. That product quality has really made a big difference. You know, when you're in the lagoon and you're riding a 2 meter barreling wave, which has taken my health multiple times, I might add, you know, as I've connected, you know, when you're going through that experience, you realize, wow, this is actually pretty cool. Like it requires a bit of skill here to position yourself right, to get your turns right, to hit the brakes when you're trying to get inside that a little bit. You know, all of those things make you realize that, oh, this is pretty real. And like I said at the beginning, Tan, you know, we never would want to be arrogant and take the position that the wave pool will replace the ocean. Absolutely not. That's the heartland of where the idea has stemmed from and something we all strongly believe in. And as a surfer myself, I would never want that to be the case, you know, because I love ocean surfing, you know. So I think it just provides a complement to surfing, a way to hone your abilities. You know, we use this common phrase of 3 hours in the lagoon is like 3 weeks in the ocean. Because of that repetition, the ability to train, the ability to practice specific moves. Maybe your drop-in's a little tough, but you've got 12 more rides in that hour to work on that drop-in if you're having some trouble, you know. So that's where I think we've hopefully overcome some of the, the negativity, in that it is actually an experience. And certainly Urban Surf, we're trying to position as not a brand that's trying to take over. We want to be humble. We want to be a part of the community, and we want to just offer great experiences, you know. And I think those types of things will hopefully enable us to just continue to knock down some of those barriers.
How do you see Urban Surf as a complementary tool for Australian surfers at the higher level?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a meeting with one of the associations when I was traveling last week, and they were commenting on the Vic board riders. There was a state competition, and the performance of Victoria was attributed to a lot of hours in the wave pool because they did really well. And look, there's some talented people out there anyway. So, you know, but the ability to, like I was saying, you know, tune yourself up to get to a point where, you know, just practice specific maneuvers that you may not get in variable ocean waves on a consistent basis. You know, if I look at the weekend for me up here, went out for a paddle yesterday. It was pretty big conditions, but it was quite stormy and the waves are breaking all over the place and it was a bit of a handful to manage. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the lagoon, I know, right, I don't have to worry about the takeoff point and I can focus on a turn session this hour because I know that's exactly what I'm going to get. So just that ability to be able to fine tune and work on specific zones and areas, I think accelerates the development. And what we're seeing now and what I think we'll continue to see is probably a generation of non-surfers who first learned to surf in a wave pool, and they've continued that trend because it's almost like a gym workout for them as opposed to going out in the ocean. I think, and I know some of our guests have already done that, where they've gone from being on a wave in the white water for the first time on a big foamy through to now riding intermediate and advanced sort of sessions, even some of our staff. You know, it's just phenomenal to see.
You can't replace the time. Like, I come from the gym background. I'm a corrective exercise coach, so the ability to work on the areas that you can't work on in a consistent wave have just been mind-blowing.
Yeah, very true, very true.
You know that you could, like, you know that you've got that hour in there, or you've got that 4 hour block in there, whatever you've got, but you know that you're going to work on that specific technique, have an hour in the water, have an hour out of the water with your coach, to like looking at the video footage and then going back over where the foot position was wrong perhaps, or where your turn was not right. Like, you can't guarantee that out in the ocean.
Absolutely. And I'd take my own example in this. You know, when I had a long break from surfing when I was overseas, purely because of travels, having young kids, being able to commit a half day or a day or a surf trip was really difficult where I was. Mm. But we did lots of other activities, but surfing was one that was kind of put on the back. Whereas in my 20s and 30s, I surfed all the time. And then after playing cricket for far too long into my elder years, I blew out my knee. And then my right knee, I had to get a surgery on. And my recovery on that was really quite tough. So when I first got on a board, again, coming back to Australia after a little bit of a break, I really struggled with my pop-up, my back foot position, be able to move the back foot to drive power, you know, turns, all these sorts of things. And then, you know, just stuck with it. And it was actually one of the guys from WaveGuard that, you know, we had a 3 hour block of surfing with, and we worked through the wave menu. And by the end of it was like, oh, that's right, I'm getting my memory back in the muscles here. It's mm-hmm. It's making a bit of sense. It feels right. And now, you know, I compare it to a couple of weeks when I was down in Melbourne and surfing with one of the guys, and We must have caught 20 waves in a session because we just had a smaller session. I couldn't walk the next day, but it was fantastic because it was 20 waves in a session and we were pumped, you know. So it really, you know, from my own personal experience, it's really helped me too. You know, I've still got a lot of work to do on my technique. You know, it's a bit dodgy after the operation, but, you know, the fact that I've built up the confidence now to get out in the bigger surf back home in Sydney as well is great. You know, it just gives you that confidence and reminds you that, oh, yes, now I know I'm capable of this, you know.
I think that carryover goes for people from what I've seen in the Learn to Surfs as well. So people who, especially ones who come through programs that we have that were 8 weeks long and or 5 weeks long with a certain program, but some of the girls that I've had in those courses or those programs have been complete beginners, absolutely, like never been on a surfboard before, but now have got the confidence to go and do a couple of like retreats, one day retreats down in the ocean, and probably wouldn't have had the confidence to do that had they not had that experience first. So
yeah, I think that's a bonus benefit, and where it's that confidence, right? And that is a good thing for, you know, ocean safety in general. I think just having an understanding of waves, how they work, currents, those types of things gives you a bit more confidence in the ocean. We don't want people to be overconfident in the ocean, of course.
No.
But, you know, certainly just being able to manage it, I think, is a really important part of just general safety around the ocean too.
Understanding that feeling of that current too, because I know that when we take people in, we stand on the edge of a lagoon and say it's really strong, and particularly some of the sessions that I'm coaching in, because I'm coaching in advanced and advanced turns, and I go, yep, I can't understate just how strong that current is, but you can't imitate that. So they get in the water and the first time through they're like even if they have surfed before, they're like, that's really strong. And I think that's a good thing, because you might not necessarily get that in the ocean, but the feeling that you get and the adaptation that you get in your muscles and your body prepare you for being out in the ocean.
Yeah big difference, right? You know, I was out yesterday with my son, he's 10, you know, quite stormy conditions, you know, and we were using the rip to paddle out a bit, and you know, he had me there, so I'm teaching him as we go, you know, just about that awareness. So he's a little bit scared and, oh, hang on. I'm like, no, go with it. We're going to get to a section. I'll show you how we're going to move around. And I think, you know, yeah, exactly right. All those things, just that awareness and the confidence and to not panic and how to manage it, just makes a massive difference. You know, I think it's a great thing.
Can we talk a little bit about the difference between the technology of Wave Garden, which we have at Urban Surf, and some of the other ones, and the one that's being built in, is it in Waikiki at the moment, in the middle of that's in a resort, and it's a deep pool and it's a stand-up wave, is that correct?
Yeah, like a standing wave.
Yeah, yep. Versus what we've got up in Yeppoon that gets talked about a lot with the plunger, yep, versus what we've got at Wave Garden or in Urban Surf with Wave Garden Waves technology.
Yeah, for sure. So Wave Garden operates on basically an electromechanical system where you have large paddles that push water left and right. It's actually quite a basic sort of mechanism, but obviously the science comes into it from the overall construction, the programming and how it works in sequence. The other major technology that's probably more common is a pneumatic system where there's basically air chambers that draw up water and then pump it out in a sequence in the same way and create a wave across the lagoon. Mm-hmm. Wave Garden's had a lot of publicity. We love the Wave Garden solution in Melbourne, and we're using it for Sydney, but it doesn't preclude you know, anyone from using different techs. They all operate a little bit differently. There's a lot of companies now putting research and development investment into alternate tech, particularly in the pneumatic systems. You know, I think they're becoming popular because of the, you know, how the repairs and maintenance works and the simplicity of them and things like that. So there's a lot of good tech out there. So they operate in the same sort of way in that they create, you know, closest to an ocean going wave, probably a couple of meters high. Some of the pneumatic systems say they can create a bigger wave, mm-hmm, which is sort of, you know, under development. The system in Surf Lakes, which is in Yeppoon in Queensland, is entirely unique again. And look, full credit to the guys because it's homegrown tech. You know, a fascinating thing to watch, basically a huge plunger system that pumps energy into the water from that plunging system. It creates a wave that's essentially a concentric circle around the machine. Really, really amazing stuff. It's almost like something out of Mad Max, you know. So that one is the only one of its type, and that's the R&D. I am aware they're trying to commercialize that now, but it's not something that's been set up to operate as a commercial park at this stage. In Hawaii and a lot of the other water parks you see around the world, you will see what they call a standing wave system. where essentially you've got water being fired out from pumps over a contoured slope, and you're there on almost comparable to a wakeboard or a boogie board, and you're actually not moving down the face of a wave. You're skimming over the top of the rushing water. It's probably comparable a bit more like to wakeboarding or water skiing.
Right.
But certainly in terms of balance and the experience, it's not like ocean surfing. It's quite different. But it's great fun too. You know, I've had a go on these things a few times as well. And the flooring itself, the water is super shallow because you've got jets of water blasting under your board. But it's a soft contoured floor. You know, when you fall, you're not landing on something hard because it is really shallow in that sense. It's just water blasting. So, yeah, the technology is a really interesting one. Our view from an urban surf perspective is we would like to be technology agnostic, and there's a few reasons for that. You've got to think about our ambitions and how we grow our business going forward. You know, having multiple suppliers and providers is just good business, you know, to take some risk out. But also we're seeing a lot of research and development in these other companies, and we're really enjoying that. So we want to make sure we're kind of, you know, cutting edge when it comes to the consumer experience as well.
Right.
And I think we're going to see some of that landscape change quite a bit over the next 5 years, which I think is great for the industry because as an operator for us, it gives us a lot more opportunity to create different experiences for customers. And I also like the fact that comparable to surfing where I live, you know, on yesterday I was down at Collaroy, which was working, and another day you might be at Narrabeen or Warriewood. You know, you'll go to different breaks based on what you feel like on the day or the type of surfing experience.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had the same type of thing constantly, I think, oh, it's a bit same, but to be able to create different surf experiences, I think is good for the customer as well. So it's a really exciting space. But yeah, I think over the next few years, we'll see how it all plays out.
Are you aware of, I know I heard this in one of the broadcasts recently when the tour was here in Australia, and I can't remember which female surfer it was, but is studying at Bond University a degree in engineering. Like surfers are actually getting more involved in the back end of it now. Are you aware of those engineering degrees that focus on the technology?
I don't know too much about it now because it's always been a bit of a dark art. But I think, you know, we're seeing the popularity of the industry growing pretty massively. And certainly the park in Melbourne and even the wave in Bristol have been a bit of a trigger for that. You know, and I think we'll see more of it. Interestingly enough, you know, the question for me will be, well, how far can it go? You know, take Australia. Yep. We're a population of 25 million, right?
And how big can the wave get?
Yeah, how big can the wave get? Are you ever going to create monsters?
And you know, do we need there? That?
Yeah, exactly. And look, they're expensive things to build. There's no doubt about that. And that safety is an important aspect as well. If you get much bigger, you know, some of the guys who ride big waves, I'm far removed from that. You know, absolutely fearless. You know, it's amazing. But to create that, you know, in a pool, you might be talking to a quite a small audience.
Right.
Also, the cost of construction around those types of things might really make it difficult to make them sustainable. I think that's also a question mark too.
Because being in business, you need to balance the, I guess that's always something that's interested me in terms of how do you focus on or how do you build a wave that is going to attract like our members but still cater to the other market, because you've got it, like if you had just one or the other, the business is not going to survive.
I agree. And you're 100% right. So the key is in the flexibility of technology, right? So the more flexible your technology can be, provided it produces, you know, you need a quality experience, you need the capacity to hold a number of guests over a period of time, and you need a frequent wave. So you're not just sitting there waiting 15 minutes for a wave to come through. You know, it's
like at Surf Ranch is 4 minutes or one wave every 4 minutes, right?
Yeah. And I mean, the wave is amazing. It's world-class, but it does take a while to sort of, and it's very long, but it takes a while to settle and get back into action, you know? So that's a different proposition altogether, which, you know, for us in terms of where Urban Surf stands, that's probably a more difficult one to sort of go down the path of. I don't think that's the right model. I think where we are now is kind of the right one. And if we can have different technologies producing that same sort of overall approach, I think then you're in good shape, because you want to be able to vary it. You know, if you look at some of the newer tech that's coming from pneumatics, you can actually create a different wave on the left and a different wave on the right, or you can ride a wave all the way across the lagoon for a longer ride. So these are some of the things that appeal to me, because the adaptability and the flexibility to talk to different customers at the same time.
Yeah, not just having one setting on both sides. That'd be awesome.
That's right. Yeah, exactly right. So at the moment, as you know, in Melbourne, we have to have specific sessions where, you know, for an hour, you've got a cruiser or an advance or whatever the wave might be. That also has a kick-on effect into the bay areas and lessons and how they play. So the yield of the day is quite a complicated thing to manage. But if you can, if you can make that simpler and reduce the complexity of it, you've made your business model that much simpler as well, which just makes sense.
Yeah, like that's very exciting.
Mm, absolutely.
What do you look at when you're looking at, so we know that you're opening in Sydney, hopefully with 2022?
Yeah, the end of 2022 is the target at the moment. We're very hopeful of that, yeah.
So what do you look at when you're looking at locations in terms of like size you'd need and demographics of the people in the area? Do you do all of that background work before you even look at a site?
We do, yeah. Finding big chunks of land to build a 2 hectare sized pool that fires 2 meter waves into the floor, surprisingly, is a little bit complicated. But yeah, that's half the battle is where do you find a chunk of land? So it might be between say 4 and 6 hectares, 4 being on the smaller side, 6 being comparable to Melbourne. It's under that. You know, you've got to find that sort of space. You need to consider things like the slope of the land. You can't put it on a hill, for example, for obvious reasons.
A cost, yep.
Yeah, you've got to be mindful of being in a floodplain because that has an impact. Yeah. You know, you need power and mains water connections and you know, you need infrastructure around roads and transport. Add to that, you also need to make sure that within a zone of your park that people aren't having to drive, say, 2 hours to get to the lagoon for a surf, you know, right. Otherwise you might as well just go to the coast, you know.
Like Surf Ranch in the middle of nowhere, yeah.
Yeah, so all of these things make a difference. So if I take the Sydney example, where we are in Sydney Olympic Park, there's obviously a bit of heartland stuff there from the Olympics, you know, over 20 years ago. But it is quite central in terms of Sydney. You know, I grew up in the West and that Western Sydney area has just grown immeasurably. Mm-hmm. But you've also still got a good hour drive time from, say, Avalon in the northern beaches down to the Royal National Park and the south across the Penrith. So you've got a good catchment. Mm-hmm. And we need the access to be able to get in there. So that central sort of location is really key. And look, every piece of ground you look at has some sort of problem. You know, it's just the nature of construction, particularly in the civil sort of space. We have the same in Melbourne, we'll have the same in Sydney, we'll have the same in every part we look at. So, you know, it's not as simple as just finding a block of land and building it. You've got to make sure it stacks up because, like I said earlier on, you know, they're expensive to build. So you can't just build it in the middle of nowhere and hope everyone will come because you may not be around if that's the case, you know, depending on your model. You know, if it's your own personal pool, great, good luck. But, you know, to run it as a business that services the public, I think, is a very different sort of proposition.
What do you do in terms of repairing the environment or your footprint, footprint on the environment, basically? Mm. Like, what do you do in terms of looking after the environment and giving back what you take from it?
Yeah, so for the most part, you know, and again, this is a new industry. This sort of construction is big. It does have an impact. We try to look for land where we're not having an impact around us. If you take the Sydney site, we do have some rules we have to follow from an environmental and ecological perspective, which we'll build into the park. We try to use recycled materials such as recycled concrete, you know, in everything we're basically building. We're looking at, in Melbourne right now, we've got a solar panels application put in with the airport to make sure that we can, you know, try and recover some of the energy, which is great. Naturally, that's a complicated one to approve because they need to see that there's no reflection or impact on flight paths and things like
that's
that.
That's right, yeah. Because we're in Melbourne Precinct, for those people who don't know, we're in Tullamarine, right, in Melbourne Precinct, or Melbourne Airport Precinct, I should say.
Yeah, the other one too is that we have signed renewable energy contracts. So we're working with energy providers that, you know, source their energy from hydro in Tasmania and things like that, for example. So renewable energy sources. So, you know, it's not the full answer to sort of being perfectly sound. At the end of the day, you know, it's a big construction. You know, they are energy thirsty at the moment, wave pools, but mm-hmm. I expect over time this will continue to improve. And we're already seeing improvements in the levels of usage as we go forward. But I'd love to be able to get to a point where we can say that we actually are pretty neutral in terms of the impact. That's definitely a future goal for us. Probably some years away yet, but it's absolutely something we have to strive toward. And particularly as surfers too, you know, you're kind of in touch with the environment and what we believe in and what we love.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, you want to minimise the impact you have on that environment, you know, and And that's a really important piece, certainly for me going forward.
What positive impact have you seen on the communities around Melbourne, for example, in terms of you being in there?
Yeah, I think we work with a number of charity groups, which is really good. That's in its early stages. We've had a lot of business interruption, as you know. I mean, you know, last week we reopened the park for the fifth time since launching a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's been some great charity work, you know, Ways of Wellness, Surf Aid, you know, various other groups that we've been working with, a couple of Indigenous groups in there. We work very closely with Surfing Victoria too in some of the causes they're following as well. And I think that's really important because the state surfing associations are really attuned to your local board riders clubs and those groups. But also Urban Surf gives them a bit of a voice to talk to those people that are non-coastal as well, which is exciting, you know, so they're able to broaden some of their approach. In the local community, I think, you know, we have a lot of support actually from our locals in the surrounding postcode, which is quite interesting. One of our regular guests across the road, he works shift work and he doesn't mind coming home in the early morning to sleep during the day because he's got the sound of the ocean that rings into his ears. So it's a really quite funny story, you know, but this is kind of what he told us, you know, which is great fun. So I think, you know, in the early days where people maybe are a little bit nervous about what it means, I think they've realized now with the opening of the park that, look, it's actually a great experience. You know, we're not trying to take over the world here. We're just trying to create something that's community driven. It's great fun. It's safe and it's something to try. And I think that's sort of resonated through the feedback we get from customers, which has been great. And same in the local community as well. So we want to make sure we keep striving toward that. I think that's something we should never, ever lose.
Yeah. Yeah, because they are very close to us where we are. They're pretty close. This will probably be one of my last questions for you. What have you learnt from opening Melbourne that you're taking into Sydney as a positive or a negative? So what are the things that you've, have you learnt from Urban Surf in Melbourne that you're making a positive change to the development of Sydney?
Yeah, sure. Look, this one we could talk about for hours because there's been a mountain of learnings from the Melbourne experience. I think, but if you break it into sort of two broad chunks, one is certainly around the construction aspect. You know, no one had really built a lagoon of this scale or size before. We learned a lot about the right way to structure contracts, the right way to do the civil works. What are some of the things you're going to come across that you need to allow contingencies for in construction? Mm-hmm. What's the impact of rain on building a big muddy pit until you put concrete on it? You know, so there's all these sorts of things.
And having dirty rain come in, who could have expected that?
Yeah. Look, the water treatment side has been a massive learning, and you know, credit to the team now that they're doing an amazing job. But you know, talk about overcoming adversity. I mean, that's been another big learning. But the amount of setbacks we had, everything from weather to the red rain to bushfires to lightning strikes, not at the lagoon but in the vicinity, all of these things teach you about, you know, what you have to operate. Everything from when Melbourne's had uncharacteristic, you know, mid-40s days, what impact did that have on the wave machine? What do we have to do to cool down the machinery around it and things like that? So they're all great learnings that we had on the job. So all of that will definitely apply to Sydney. But the other part too is I think what we've learned about the customer experience, there's no doubt building one of these things is complicated, but they're also complicated to run. You're talking about, you know, 60 to 80 bodies in the water with surfboards, catching waves, you know, your risk and your safety process and your rescue process, all these things are just so, so crucial, you know, and that to me is going to be a point of difference in the future. If you don't have that down pat and you run that very professionally, I think that's a problem. You know, it's something we believe in very much. You have injuries. It's inevitable. You can't deny that. But whatever you can do to prevent it, manage it, and recover from it is really the key there. You know, so I think that's some of the key learnings. And we've fed some of those things into the design of Sydney, for example, like, you know, proximity of you know, first aid or even retail or hire within each other and how they relate based on the customer feedback has been a really important consideration. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, if I was given an overarching sort of learning from Melbourne is, you know, the need to be adaptable, flexible and resilient. And that's probably a message for anyone in business at the moment, given what we've all been through.
Yeah, through COVID.
Yeah, it's certainly something we'll take in the city and that when it feels like it's about to explode, you'll still get through it. You know, you'll still be able to push through it. And you just got to stay positive, work together and keep punching at the goals. You know, I think that's the kind of the key message I would take away from it for me.
I think one of the things that I've seen too is that people will come back even after COVID.
But yeah, most definitely, you know, and the people factor is for me, you know, in my role as a CEO, that's kind of number one, you know. Yeah, you've got all these responsibilities that you have, but you know, last year when we were closed, you know, despite not having much to say sometimes on the, we had a weekly call. We just connected with our team. We connected with our customers. We spoke to people. We told them how we were feeling. We told them what was going on. We were very honest and direct and just being straight. And I think for that, we got a lot of support. I think people really appreciated that. We weren't trying to sugarcoat it. It is what it is. You move forward together. And I think that's created a really tight bond, A, between the team, but also with our customers as well, which is fantastic. And that's something I'm really appreciative of.
How do you think going forward, surfing can marry with other industries? So we had For the Love in Urban Surf at Melbourne at the beginning of this year, which was amazing and fantastic. And I think that opened up a whole lot of people's views from other industry to what you can do to bring both of these things together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the introduction of wave pools into the surfing sort of industry probably creates access for a broader group of people. As I said, you know, there's a lot of non-surfers that you would have in the pool that you wouldn't normally get in the ocean. So I think taking surfing into the mainstream breaks down a lot of those barriers that may have been perceived perhaps, I don't know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when surfing was a very different type of sport. That creates massive opportunities for the industry, for what we're trying to do, but also for people to do something that's just damn enjoyable, right? You know, for those of us who are surfers, there's a reason we surf. Compare it to playing golf. I know when I hit that one shot that's straight out of my 100 shots that don't, yeah, I'll still come back because it's like an addiction. You know, I'll get that shot again. I'll try and do it again. Yeah. It's the same with a wave, right? It's the same with surfing. You know, we all do it for a reason. And I think introducing a whole new crowd to that in the right sort of way just opens up so many doors for everyone. That's really exciting to me. It really changes the landscape of it all.
Sharing the stoke.
Yeah.
What would you like people to know about Urban Surf and about where you're going as a last question?
Yeah, great question. We are in the midst of our capital raise for the Sydney project, which is really exciting. We are pumped about that. That one got delayed because of COVID. So, you know, fingers crossed that all gets completed. And I should know about that in the next sort of 4 to 6 weeks, where we're looking to actually break ground on the site. So I think having everyone aware that, look, hopefully that's coming and we're not just a one park business, we'll have two. Mm-hmm. We are working toward other locations, and that is using different technology in some cases. So that's another very exciting proposition because, again, for me to stay close to the customer, I'd like that to be the opportunity for us as a business so we can create those unique experiences. And, you know, hopefully in the fullness of time over the next 5 years, we'll have, you know, four parks in the pipe. You know, it may not all be open, but, you know, to be able to offer that. And I think certainly looking at how Urban Surf can stretch what it's done in Australia as a you know, a core surfing nation, where we can take that abroad. So that's probably the key thing for me. It's exciting, you know, but at the same time, no matter where we go, we always want to maintain, as you said, you know, that customer stoke, you know, that authentic experience, that great customer experience. You know, that's kind of what it's all about for me.
Awesome. Thank you very much for being with me today, Damo.
No worries. Thanks, Tan. Great to catch up.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Amongst the Waves. I would love for you to leave your review on Apple Podcasts. Reviews help increase our rankings, let more people listen to the podcast, and share the love.